Flashback? Flashback?
Rufio! Rufio!
Flashbacks.
All day I've had this strong desire, raging from within. You can say that my heart's on fire.
Somewhere between.
Keep your hands on where I can see them, man.
Hey, it's 21st century, man. I don't know what I can do.
Flashbacks.
You are a sick individual and you need to be put out of your misery.
Flashback? Flashback?
Well, hello everybody out there in podcast land and welcome to the Front Row Network's Flashbacks, a part of NPR Illinois' Community Voices, where we get all nostalgia-like about the movies of our past. Movies from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s that have helped shape the way we look at cinema and pop culture today, and how those movies have given us insight and hope in our everyday lives. Now, if you've ever caused a zombie outbreak on your first day of work while jamming out to the tunes of The Damned, well, then you're thinking about Return of the Dead. That is the movie we're going to be discussing tonight. I am Ryan Lutens, and with me tonight is...
It's me, Jay, and the movie's Return of the Living Dead.
What did I say?
Return of the Dead.
Dang. It's always titles that I get hung up on. I can't... You're right. You create these great scripts, and I don't know how to read. So, all right. With us tonight, we have a very, very special guest. She is a frequent collaborator with us here on Flashbacks, so much so that she's broken us down. We've decided we needed a fourth, and so we've asked her to become a co-host with us. We've rounded out our panel here on Flashbacks. It is an honor to announce that Erin McCabe is our fourth. How you doing, Erin?
I don't even have words right now to talk about how excited I am to be on Flashbacks. I love all the shows on the Front Row Network, but I feel like Flashbacks is for sure my vibe. I love me some Flashback movies, and I'm even more excited for you guys to introduce me as one of the new co-hosts on Return of the Living Dead, because this is one of my faves. I've never felt more at home in the front row, where I can say "send more paramedics" and everyone knows what I'm talking about. I'm no longer the nerd at the party, guys.
Yes, welcome, welcome, and what a great episode to have you on, because this is the Flashbacks contribution to MonsterCast. We are talking Return of the Living Dead, not just the dead; they're living dead because they can talk in this movie, and we're going to get to that. Jay, why don't you break down our synopsis for us?
All right. Freddie and Frank are two bumbling buffoons who work at a medical supply warehouse who put way too much faith in the work of the Army Corps of Engineers. One leaking canister of 245 trioxin later, we have a punk rock apocalypse with running, talking zombies who crave nothing more than the sweet, sweet juices of brains to curb the pain caused by... well, being dead. Punk rockers, a mortician, and the geniuses from the medical supply warehouse team up to try their best to party on through the scourge of brainy zombies.
You know, I can't think of a better movie to talk about for MonsterCast for Flashbacks than this movie and the fact that it's celebrating its 35th anniversary. This is great. I mean, this movie takes the zombie level to a whole nother level. So we'll get into that. Erin, why don't you hit us with some fun facts?
Fun facts. That's me, Erin. Fun facts. So this movie is directed and a screenplay written by Dan O'Bannon, who also wrote Alien and John Carpenter's directorial feature film debut, Dark Star. John A. Russo also has a story by credit with this film. He was the co-writer of Night of the Living Dead alongside Zombie King himself, George Romero. This movie stars Clue Gulager. Is that how you say that? Am I messing that up?
No, that's right.
Sounds about right.
Okay. I feel like it's too, like, I'm like, is it so easy that I'm actually messing it up? Clue Gulager as Bert, James Karen, who is starred in Poltergeist, as Frank, Don Calfa as Ernie, Tom Matthews, who plays Tommy Jarvis in the Friday the 13th series, stars as Freddy. You've got Miguel A. Nunez Jr., who plays Spider, and Miguel A. Nunez shows up in
Friday 13th Part 5.
Friday the 13th Part 5, and Street Fighter is DJ.
Yep.
I thought you were going to say Juana Man.
That works too.
didn't know that happened too.
All three equally good movies.
Yes. Brian Peck stars as Scuzz. B movie scream queen Linnea Quigley as Trash. Many an adolescent, I think, remembers Linnea Quigley. If they don't know the name, they see the still or the scene in the movie, they know exactly who she is.
Wow. And we'll get to that.
Mark Venturini as Suicide, who he plays a great role, and we'll get into that later. This film had a budget of $4 million estimated. It released on August 16th, 1985. I feel like one third of the people on this podcast maybe weren't born yet. And cumulative worldwide gross of cumulative worldwide gross $14,237,880. So this movie definitely made a profit. And John A. Russo owned the rights to the term Living Dead, which is why after Night of the Living Dead, the following Romero sequels were called Of the Dead. But like Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead.
And like I screwed up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe you were just stuck on the George Romero series, and that's why. That's where your heart is, Ryan.
Maybe.
Okay. And it was nominated for 4 Saturn Awards in 1985. So somebody help me out. What are Saturn Awards? And
sci-fi, fantasy, horror.
Okay.
Genre awards, you know.
Love it.
So to go back to your previous thing, it's one third because it was just you.
I was born in 82.
You're the only one born.
We're both 86.
Damn it. Now I'm the old lady, and that's why they brought me on to flashbacks.
No, Scott. The Godfathers. I mean, he'll always be the Godfather
and mom.
Scott's the one we go to when we want extra candy. All right, so let's do what we always do here at the Front Row. I cannot wait. It's MonsterCast. I love talking horror movies. Let's talk about first memory of the film. Let's go with our newest co-host. We'll let you start it off.
Mm-hmm. My first memory of this film, okay, I don't think that I'm a big zombie movie fan. I love a good zombie movie. My favorite zombie movie, I'm just going to throw it, probably might be 28 Days Later. So I'm into the zombie genre. I don't think I saw this one until later, or if I did, I didn't realize I saw it. As you found out, some people find out on the other podcast, my parents let me watch a plethora of age inappropriate movies growing up. So I probably saw this somewhere, but I've got a feeling I didn't actually watch it the full thing until I was older. I feel like I saw Return of the Living Dead Part 3 before I ever remember seeing the original. Again, inappropriate for a 10-year-old to be watching. But I love this movie, and it was scarier when I was younger and saw it. Now that I see it, I can appreciate it for so much more of what it is, how smart it is. I have like vague memories of it, not like a real specific one. What about you guys?
So for me, my first memory of this movie is I never watched the first one first. I actually remember seeing the second one way more than seeing the first one. Mm. And it just stuck me. Now that movie is just absolute garbage, and it's great. I love it. It's like got 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. But, what's great about the second movie, and we'll talk about the later, is it's got, James Caan and Tom Matthews again as the bumbling people who deal with this, you know, zombie apocalypse. But I remember watching this on some October night, probably on TV, the second one. And then I heard that there was a first one. And so I tried to stay up because they were doing a marathon and I fell asleep. So I asked my parents, I'm like, can we go get this movie? I was probably 12, 13. My mom's like, sure, no problem. She loves horror. And then of course the famous Linnea Quigley scene comes on, and I'm watching with my mom, like, I'm going to go in the other room. You let me know when this is over. So, for those of you that don't know, Linnea Quigley is the B movie queen, and she gets stark naked and just dance on a tombstone. It's the weirdest thing ever. But no, But yeah, just watching it then and there, I laughed more than anything. And what I love about this zombie movie is the makeup is subtle and yet so extreme. I mean, yeah. There's just zombies that are just caked in mud, and there are zombies that have just great detail, like Tarman, and we'll get to him later. So I just remember watching this and be like, man, the second one sucked. And I remember that at a young age, I'm like, man, the second one was terrible. And the first one rocked. So, but yeah, I mean, just watching, like, man, this is great, because it's just, you see more and you see more direction with the zombie. It really kind of sticks with you. You know, you've got Romero zombies who are just sulking around, you know, mindless things. And these zombies actually got some tune. So that's my first recollection. Jay, what are your first thoughts?
Well, first, so you realized while watching Return of the Living Dead Part 2, you then heard there was a first one?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wanted to check.
Yeah.
I'm glad you figured that out. I have not seen any of the sequels. I'm actually way late to the party on this movie. I'll be honest, I wasn't a big zombie guy when I was younger, and I don't know why. Like, I really liked horror. I just never got into the zombie genre. I was a little heavy into the slasher stuff as a kid, like, because you weren't supposed to watch it, especially the later sequels, right? It's all about gratuitous nudity and violence, and like, that's it. So, like, yeah, of course, young me was like, that's what I gotta try to see that they don't want me to see. Of course. So I was late. I'm late to the game with the zombie stuff. Late to the game being, I think, honestly, Shaun of the Dead might have been kind of my intro to the zombie world when I was in the Army. And then my buddy that showed me that was really into zombies. And then from there, you know, he carried on. But I think last year was the first time I saw Return. Because I think it got lost, which I think has happened to a lot of people. I think this is a problem kind of with the title, is people confuse it with the Romero series, or they think it's a cheap, crappy knockoff of the Romero series, which is where I fell into forever and ever. I thought it was some cheapo knockoff, garbagey. You know, I don't want to watch that. I can go watch the Romero ones. But then, you know, just reading about movie news like us nerds do, I'm like, why is this on every best zombie movie list? Because I thought this movie was, like, not good. And I mean, just so wrong. So utterly mistaken. And, you know, I think some of it's the art, too, that's on, you know, the poster art makes it look like it's a cheapo. But now, once you watch it, I'm like, I love the art. Like, it goes so well with it. But on initial look, it throws it off. So my first viewing was last year. And I loved it so much. You know, I saw it had its 35th. I think I texted you a whole bunch, Ryan. Like, hey, I mean, I know you got to do these movies, but I think we should probably do this movie too. And then everything got canceled anyway, so it worked out perfectly. But no, I love it. I love the punk rock attitude. I love the comedy horror combination, because it walks that tightrope absolutely perfectly. Mm-hmm. The horror elements, the some of the creature feature work is some of the best zombie creature feature work I think there is out there. And you mentioned Tarman. I'm sure we'll talk about him at length. Just icon of horror is what that character is. And I think last thing I'll end on is I like how it's not a sequel to Night of the Living Dead, but it is, it right? Is. It's like it's a meta sequel. It's not a direct sequel. It's a meta sequel, because Night of the Living Dead is a movie made about a real incident. And that real incident is what causes Return of the Living Dead. So I like that there's even that meta element involved, because all throughout it, you know, it's
so clever.
It worked in the movie, you know, like they keep referencing Night of the Living Dead for how they're trying to stop the zombie apocalypse, except we find out this one is far more intense than I think we could argue any other zombie movie. I mean,
there's no stopping it.
So So I'm dragging on and on. My first memories last year. Love this movie. Love this movie. And I was so thrilled we got to watch it and talk about it again.
Yeah, I mean, for MonsterCast, we were supposed to do Candyman when we're talking about the original. That got canceled. And then we didn't know yet what we were going to do for our next film, which we'll talk about later. So Jay's like, let's just do this one. I'm like, okay, I like that movie. So here we are. Let's talk favorite scenes. Jay, you went last time. What's some of your favorite scenes?
All right, I'll try not to steal too many.
All right, I'll try not to.
Because I have a bunch written down, because I'm really I like so many of them. I have four, so I like the intro. I think it's a really great intro to give us. It's one of those intros where they give us all the exposition we need, but it's tight and it's quick, and that's all you need. And I like that. And then just right before the opening credits, the final lines, do these things leak? My God, son, these were made the good old Army Corps of Engineers. And he slaps it in his face. It's so hilarious.
So so does this mean the Army started the apocalypse?
Yes, it does. The intro to Tar Man. I'm going to just say that scene because I'm sure one of you two will talk about it. That's amazing. The grave popping, I call it grave popping to party times, what I wrote down. It's when all the punk rockers, it's raining and they run back into the cemetery. And I love the name of the cemetery, Resurrection Cemetery.
Right.
They run back in and they hear this moan and then this very cheesy looking skeleton with eyeballs pops up. Yeah. But the only reason that works is because they play the song Party Time by the band 45 Grave. And right, like, that's where you're like, this is a punk rock horror movie. And I love it. I love it. I love it. And then that's when all the zombies start crawling out of the graves.
I have to add on to that. The best part about that skeleton, it's not just the eyes either. It's the eyes and it's looking up and his mouth just drops. He's like, ah!
every skull, every skeleton in that movie. I'm a nurse. For the listeners that don't know, let me tell you how anatomically incorrect. But that every single corpse and skeleton has eyeballs in that entire thing. I was like so impressed.
Did you know?
Make sure we're medically correct.
That skeleton was a real skeleton. They purchased it from a medical facility, so that was a real skeleton. The eyeballs may have been fake. I don't know if they said that. You're the expert, so I'll take your word on it.
I would say they looked like fake eyeballs to me.
I would want to sell my skeleton to him knowing that it'd be in a movie. Put fake eyeballs on it. Go nuts.
It was great.
Now we know that Ryan has some contingencies in his will that he will donate his body to science only if the skeleton ends up in a movie somewhere.
It would work too. It would work. They'd be like, of course we're going to adhere to this guy's dying wish.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
How else to add to the horror? One last one I want to slip in there is the half corpse discussion scene. It's just a half of a lady where they talk, and there's the rest of the exposition. And so I probably just stole literally all yours. So I'm just going to say my scenes. And
the podcast is over because Jay has stolen everyone's scenes.
No, go ahead, Aaron. Let's digress. Let's talk about the scene. Okay, so like I like this. This is like, because it's just like you're getting the whole plot of the movie, like their whole motive. You know, you never get that from a zombie movie, but here's this zombie that just killed. It was suicide, right? No, it wasn't suicide. Suicide was Tar Man. It was the other one.
Rez,
that's right. And she's just talking to him, just shooting the stuff, just hanging out. Hey, we're hungry for brains because, well, it eases the pain of dying because that's what we're doing. I mean, it just works for me.
That was pretty chilling, though. I mean, I thought the voice was great. That was actually the actor that played Rez did the voice, and then they increased the pitch of the voice to make it sound feminine. Yes. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of – he actually played a zombie in there, too, because they needed actors. And he's like, I'll do it. What do you need? then he'd just hop in and do that stuff. But that scene is, it's creepy. And I just love that the zombies have a motive.
it's creepy. And it's just so bizarre. Like you never get that in a zombie movie. You would never get that from a Romero movie or even movies that we see nowadays. You know, I've never seen a zombie talk in any other zombie movie besides maybe Warm Bodies or something like that.
I was just going to say Warm Bodies.
Oh, relax. What about one of the Romero ones?
Oh, Land of the Dead.
Land of the Dead.
Wait, the remake? Or no, Land of the Dead's not a remake. Land of the Dead is a straight up installment.
That was the next trilogy. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, and it hadn't been done before, 85. So, I mean, definitely, you know, new to the genre. And he definitely took it places, you know, adding comedy and this kind of different type of twist with the punk rock. I mean, it works. So, Aaron.
Yeah. I think, too, well, what you're bringing in with the, and I had this whole discussion with my husband. I'm like, I'm doing a podcast and, you know, tonight. And he's like, oh, what movie? I'm like, oh, Return of the Living Dead. He's like, the one in the mall? I'm like, no, that's Dawn of the Dead. And he's like, I don't know this movie. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, and I'm going on and I'm like, I'm giving him all these examples. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, the army barrel? He's like, no. I'm like, the animatronic half body that they're talking to on the table? And he's like, no. I'm like, the redhead with the naked boobs. He's like, no. I'm like, get out. Get out of the house. I can't believe we're married. But he's not familiar, but what I love about this movie, I'm like, you gotta watch this movie because it's such a time capsule too of like the special effects of the time. Like you're getting like all these different types of effects. And so what I'm going to say with one of my favorite scenes that I enjoyed so much watching it this time is the whole scene with the cadaver. When they call in Bert, when Frank and Freddie call in Bert and they're like, you got to take care of this. And they're going on and they're bantering back and forth and blah, blah, blah. And then he comes out and they end up like putting the pickaxes in his head and then cutting it off. And then the body's running around. You literally see like three different types of special effects in that scene alone. And it's, you know, it's so funny. You've got them. They're trying to saw into the head. You're seeing the like you can tell the animatronic eyes are moving and it's like just doing like the same motion it's supposed to be doing, which when you're 11 and watching it is really scary. When you're 38 and watching it, you're like, this is brilliant. And then you see the head, the body get up. And then all of a sudden, like the man who was playing the cadaver was clearly in more athletic shape. And then all of a sudden they've got this this like body that pops up with no head that like turns into like, cause the guy's kind of like a yellowish color.
Yep.
It's kind of like a yellowish, like fat suit. And then he's running around and then it goes back to like someone in like, you can see when they're in between the aisles, it's somebody in some sort of like nylon suit, like yellow nylon suit. And I'm like, this is just amazing because special effects are hard, especially for horror. And there's something I really appreciated about that scene. Not only the banter between Bert and Freddie and Frank, but also just all of the different ways they're trying to make this scene work and like pulling out all the stops for this movie.
Yeah.
And when he gets the pickaxe to the head and he just starts screaming,
yes.
that's a great scene because it's so early on and it totally subverts every expectation we have of how zombies work.
Like, James right Aaron is crazy. I mean, he's fantastic in this movie. So
he's amazing in this movie. Everyone does a great job in this movie knowing exactly what they're in and like playing it to the nines. It's brilliant. Right.
For sure. Since we're in kind of the medical supply, I'm going to share my favorite scene and then I'm going to add another. And then Aaron, I'm going to let you take the last one, which I'm fairly certain I know what it is. So my favorite one when we're in that is right after everything happens when all the gas, I guess, comes out and they're in a medical supply store and you don't know what the effects are. We don't get our traditional zombies. We see a reanimated half dog. And I'm telling you, special effects here when I saw that at a young age, I'm like, this movie is going to be great. Because if they can do that and make it seem believable, which they did, I'm like, I'm all in. Because you literally have a dog cut vertically and it's like on a post, but it's alive because it's dead, you know? So it's, you know, it's just like, okay, this movie is going to be fun. I don't necessarily think it's going to be scary, but it's going to be fun. But in turn, it does get scary. One scene that I really enjoyed, just to, you know, it kind of amps it up. You know, you're sitting there, it's Ernie. Ernie's the mortician, and he's the one that burns the bodies. And then that, of course, causes smoke to rise, rain falls, and then we have our apocalypse. But Ernie's going to go check out and see if the cars are out there. And he's going around the paramedic, the ambulance, and he sees this zombie eating the paramedic. But the zombie is a little person, and he shoots it, and it just comes alive, and it just doesn't stop. I'm like, oh crap, these zombies are unstoppable. This is crazy. I mean, in that moment, like, it was just perfect. And that's what I love about the zombie movies, like this movie in especially. Every type of zombie, you get it in this movie. There's animal. There's a yellow zombie. There's a naked zombie. There is mud-covered zombie. There is a little person zombie. I mean, it just leaves it just puts everything out there. So, I mean, you've got two scenes that I really, really enjoyed and really, really like. Just another scene that I like is – it's not a scene, but it's brought up often, and Jay, you already mentioned it. Just the con saying, did it work in the movies? Is this how it worked in the movies? I mean, just being completely meta just made the movie more fun. So, yeah, those are a few of my favorite scenes. So I have another, but I want to leave it to Erin because she brought this up. So I got to give it to her.
I don't know that it might still be for you because I will list my favorite scene. I don't know if it's yours and if we're talking about the same thing, but one of my favorite scenes is when the second ambulance pulls up. Is that the scene you were going to talk about?
Then more.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. I also really enjoyed the scene with trash because it was just awesome.
We'll let you talk about that.
Yeah, when the second ambulance shows up and they're like looking around for everybody and they're like, where are they? And then they get a bum rush of zombies and like, also correcting myself, but like people who haven't seen this movie who think that the first time the world sees Fast Zombies is with 28 Days Later, you are mistaken. It is this movie. This is in 1985 is when we get Fast Zombies, which blows everyone's minds. So they get a bum rush and then you get the guy in the car who he's obviously going to dispatch. Who's like, hey, we don't hear any answers here. Is everything okay? What's going on? And he says it so slow, you know, this is so-and-so, send more paramedics. And I don't know why, I just love that scene. I love that. I think, you know, when I was younger and more into horror, I would randomly like see that on other horror sites or like other horror people where I'd be like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. No one else, none of my friends know what I'm talking about if I say that, but you guys do, so I'd get you.
Well, that's the best part too, because they do it later on with the cops.
Yes.
Like, see, that's what I was going to say. Like, you know, when I said every type of zombies, these zombies are smart. I mean, you literally have a zombie waving a thing that says, hey, we need you over here. And then the zombies just bum rush them. It's just crazy. They play an ambush.
That's a great point.
It's great. Well, I mentioned Tar Man, but we didn't talk about it.
Well, we'll come back. We'll let you do it, and then we'll let Erin talk about trash a scene. Because I mean, I have a thought.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
No.
I just wanted to make sure we talk about Tar Man.
We'll get to Tar
Man. Gotta talk about trash too, though.
Your takeaways and special effects, but let's talk about the Tar Man reveal. You know, in this canister, when it opens up, it's just a regular old zombie. But then as the gas leaks out, there is major decomposition. And the first time we see the zombie is, what's her name? What's the girl's name? What's the girlfriend? I forget. Oh, but she's walking down there. She's looking for Freddy. And
I want to say Franny.
She hears something and she turns around and just there's Tar Man. Like you don't see his face. Like, he steps out of the shadows. This is a great reveal for zombie movies. Mm-hmm. Steps out of the shadows. You do not see his head. And then the camera, it cuts back to her, and it cuts back to Tarman's head. And he just lunges forward and just says Jay's favorite word, brains. Like, it's just, like, probably the best reveal, you know, besides, you know, the shark from Jaws. I don't know.
Well, we thought you were talking about Jaws.
Yeah.
But it's also great, like, special effects, like, everything about it. Like, the way that that actor and the, like, just everything about it, like, his eyes get wider, like, the movements he makes. No one can see me doing this because you're listening to it. You're not actually watching me. But I'm always making motions. But, yeah, just the way his body language is in that scene, I think really adds to how great it is, too.
Well, and the face they made animatronic, so it makes it, you know, it's a skull, but it has facial features, and you know, it sounds like it'd be corny, but it's absolutely frightening. Like, he's a scary looking monster,
and it's like totally. He has like eyebrows too,
and he moves all disjointed, and he's slimy and dripping off, and
yeah, man,
he's awesome. Tina is her name, by the way. It's Tina.
Tina. Thank you.
Yeah.
I knew I should remember that because the very end.
Tina.
I just want to eat your brains.
Tina.
Which also in that scene, let's just stop and talk about that scene for just a second. When like Freddie all of a sudden turns into like a narcissist. Like, when I get it, he's dead. He's a zombie now. But all of a sudden, he's like, it's your fault, Tina. You need to let me eat your brains. And I'm like, when did this evolve into like a narcissistic, semi-abusive relationship?
I love you. Let me kill you.
Yeah.
It's the necropathy of the brain.
Right.
Causing that.
So, oh my gosh. So where we have that, you know, kind of strike against female, we have probably the best scene in female empowerment in the whole thing. Let's talk about Trash's famous scene. And like you were saying, this scene is probably the most cutout scene when it's played on television, because she is literally top to bottom naked, but she is just dancing because she wants to. I mean, Trash is a female character. She's sitting there and she goes, do you dream about death? Like, she is a believable character. You know, she's not just played by this, you know, dumb blonde stereotype. Like, she's a punk rocker who does not care. Aaron, what were you going to say about Trash?
Oh, no, nothing. Just, you know, I think maybe that probably ties into some of my first memories where, like, when you're seeing this, you're like, oh, my gosh. Like, because it just, you're watching a zombie movie and, like, we get it. A lot of the slasher films have that gratuitous nudity or, like, there's a sex scene between teenagers or something, right? And this is, like, they're in a cemetery. And she's just hanging out next to Spider. Is that his name? Who's a great character.
Yep.
And she just starts going into this, like, this fantasy conversation where she's like, yeah, you ever, like, it's real messed up being like, you ever dream about dying? And, like, let me tell you all the ways that I wish, or, like, the worst way to die. And, like, Spider's clearly, like, disturbed by what she's saying. Like,
right?
Not with, like, he's like, what? And she's like getting turned on, and then all of a sudden she's talking about it, rips her clothes off, and then there's like some voice in the background. I don't know if it's Spider or someone else. They're like, hey guys, Trash is taking her clothes off again. And then, yeah, she just like gets on the car, gets on the tombstone, and is just like rocking it. And especially if you're not expecting it, like, she's got bright, fiery red hair. Her outfit is killer in the movie. Like, she's just this killer. She's just this killer punk princess in this film, and then ends up later, her worst nightmare, her fantasy ends up being, comes to fruition that she does end up being eaten by all these male zombies.
Naked.
So it was very interesting. Yeah, naked. And then she's naked. She's a naked zombie for the rest of the movie. So
like a super powered zombie that has a detachable jaw.
Really creepy like that. Really creep me out.
Yeah.
So for her, is this in the middle of Linnea Quigley's career? Is this in the beginning? Is this like, how does this fit into her career? Is this what makes her like what sends her into B horror movie stardom? Like, what is
it? I don't know the order of the movies.
I believe it's this is right in the middle of her tenure as the B movie queen. Okay. Because this was 85, but then she went on to do Night of the Demons. But before that, she had done Silent Night, Deadly Night, you know, the Christmas slasher.
Right.
So, you know, she was just getting started in that sense, which, you know, super bummer. I tried to reach out to Midwest Monster Fest. We'll talk about that later to see if we could get Tom Matthews and Linnea Quigley on here. But unfortunately, it just fell through. So it would have been nice to talk to her. But this was definitely right in her start. But she, you know, we have Jamie Lee Curtis as our screen queen from the 70s and 80s. Linnea Quigley is definitely the B movie screen queen. So let's move on to talking about what we like. I mean, let's talk about some of the major takeaways that we have from this movie. Like, obviously, we've talked a lot of different things when it comes to this. First thing I'm going to talk about is just the soundtrack. Not only did it have a great heavy metal punk soundtrack, but some of just the orchestration, just the melodies were really creepy, but in a playful sort of way. So that definitely helps lend to the tone. But yeah, just the songs, like there's that song Tonight, which plays when Linnea Quigley is dancing, but that also plays when she's doing her resurrection and when we see her as a zombie first time. And again, that I feel like that's a lot of female empowerment because it's just such a strong song. But yeah, that's soundtracks is something I have. And anybody else want to lend an ear to that or lend some thoughts?
Yeah, that's what I have down too. I have amazing punk rock soundtrack, man. It's great. Yeah. They got the song Surfing Dead by the Cramps, which is 100% on my Halloween music playlist. Love that song. They got a song by The Damned, which is a pretty sweet punk band, but it reminds me, I read a book by one of the drummers. Well, it's about one of the drummers because they had like three drummers in The Damned. But the book's called Rat Scabies and the Holy Grail. And it's a true story about him and his neighbor, who is a journalist. And they go on this sort of adventure searching for the Holy Grail. And it's something they actually did in real life. So anytime I see The Damned, I think about that book from one of their drummers. And then the song I mentioned earlier, Party Time, man, that just kicks it. That kicks this movie into overdrive. But it's not like at this point in time in the 80s, they weren't like punk was a big movement, but it wasn't like a big movement in horror. You know, it's usually like heavy metal or hair metal in the stuff. So to actually like go full punk with like some legit punk bands in there, it was great. But like you said, it's not just that opening
melody.
That opening song to the movie is great. Even I tried to have my wife watch the movie with me. My wife is not a movie person and she just fell asleep. So it didn't really work out for me. But she did comment, "Oh, I like that intro. That's cool." You know? So it's a really great horror intro as well, aside from like the punk rock part of the soundtrack. The other thing I had, and we mentioned just the design of Tarman, you know, major takeaway. He's unreal, man. I know we already mentioned it, but
what's great about this movie is this movie doesn't really have big name special effects guys. You know, you don't have Greg Nicotero. You don't have Tom Savini. You don't have, Frank Baker.
Rick,
thank you. Rick Baker, who did American Werewolf in London. None of those guys are attached to this movie. So that's just crazy to think that, you know, you have the greats when it comes to special effects and they didn't touch this movie. And the gore is great.
It is.
Well, and like, Carmen.
Slasher gore.
Tarman was made by the first special effects guy who got fired halfway through because of his subpar work. Like, the only thing he hit out of the park was Tarman.
Was he responsible for the cadaver scene?
No.
Oh.
I don't think so.
I mean, I not even, so. What about
I think it was the lady? Ones they, what was that?
What about Half Lady?
I don't I think that was the new crew that came in.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, they came in on 3 weeks' notice, or with 3 weeks left, and jumped in. They really didn't like his zombie work, is what it was, with the big bulk scenes. So,
well, that's dumb.
Well, they had all these designs. The guy who did all the design work on like Labyrinth, yeah, had all these super rad looking zombies. They looked like, you know, the cover of an Iron Maiden album, man. They just looked super awesome, and his work was just not meeting the request. He had already done Tarman, and Tarman was already too good anyways. So he hit that one out of the park.
Yeah,
for sure.
He used all of his good challenge up on Tarman, and then the rest of the movie got done. That's funny.
When we're talking, let's just talk about the special effects. When Scuzz, is it Scuzz? Scuzz?
Yeah.
So when he gets bitten by who we will call Half Lady. The squirting of the blood. I mean, priceless. Like, it's
so much blood.
It's just, and the best part is after they tear her off of him, it's just like minimal bite marks, but you have all this blood. I'm like, yes, that's a zombie movie. It looks like, you know, you got bite marks on your arm that broke skin and a lot of skin, but it's not like flesh hanging off. It's literally like a couple deep scrapes. I don't know if that's the proper terminology, medical expert.
Abrasions, scrapes, lacerations. I'd have to go back and look. I'll go back and give a full report.
But like, just the simplicity of the makeup effects is what makes this movie so good. I mean, they literally just threw mud on people. I'm like, okay, act dead. Like when the first paramedic turns on the light and all those people, you don't see a single decaying body.
That's a great scene too, yep, that we didn't talk about. That's a great horror scene.
Yep. He's getting ready to go. You know, they just checked out Frank and Freddie. They're going to go and get them help. So they go turn on the lights and there's just these zombies.
Doesn't that happen in Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah.
Where they turn the light and then he closes the light real quick. He's like, no.
That's got to be an homage to Return of the Dead. It's got to be.
Yeah, hands down.
There's so many hidden, you know, homages. But just, I mean, look, you just look at those people and they're just all muddy and that's all it is. And then like when the other paramedic meets his doom, he just rounds a corner and then there's just another guy who's just got like a big thing of mud on his head and like a little thing of skeleton makeup right here. And I'm like, that's perfect. I'm like, that works for me. So
there is so much to enjoy about the simplicity of this movie. And I think that's why, like Jay was saying, it probably gets passed up a lot because you think, oh, 1980s zombie movie. And now there's so much out there. And then there's The Walking Dead and there's all this stuff. So you think you're almost like too sophisticated for it, right? And then you watch it and you're like, this movie is very smart. It's very well done. The performances and the script is so clever. How much they put into the detail of hitting things for the previous movie. Like the fact that at one point, you know, when they're telling the story about what really happened in Night of the Living Dead, and they're even going like, what, this movie was probably filmed in what, like 83, 84 before it was released in 85. Even in that, you know, Night of the Living Dead was released in 1969. And so there's this point in the movie in which Frank is describing to Freddie the events like of what happened and how they got these barrels. And they're like, how long did that happen? And he's like, I don't know, probably about 14 years by now. Like, it's very, very detailed. And I love that. It's so smart. And Frank, like his performance and their banter back and forth is just brilliant. This movie fit, the pieces all just fit together on it.
It really worked for sure. Jay, got anything else you want to talk about?
We mentioned actors, but I do want to mention James Caan. You know, you just mentioned as Frank.
Oh, he's the
to
best.
Me, he's the star. He's the MVP of this because he's the one who 100% most understands the movie and the mood and the tone. And I think everybody else did a good job, but I think they fed off of him. You know, yeah. I think he was the catalyst that everybody goes, oh, this is the mood, the tone, the humor, that go, because he's over the top. Like, he just moans and wails for a good chunk of the movie out of fear. And it's just hysterical and ridiculous.
There should be a drinking game with how many times
he moans.
He says, oh, Jesus. Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. Oh, God. Oh, God. Like, the whole time.
Okay. He has got probably the most human moment in this whole film. And I'm talking about when he leaves the chapel and he goes down to the furnace and he's I can't do this. And so he puts himself in the furnace. I'm like, you wouldn't, like, this is a fun zombie movie, but you're like, that pulls at the heartstrings. Like, you would not expect that from a movie. Like, and he pulled it off brilliantly. I mean, it was such a touching moment in a crazy movie. So,
and in the beginning of the film, he's basically Lou from Caddyshack.
Yeah.
Like, in the beginning of the movie, his lines are the best. Like, pay attention, you're learning. And, like, you know, well, think of my reputation and, like, all this stuff. Like, he's just, he's amazing. Like, he really does show a whole range. He's the Al Pacino of Return of the Living Dead.
Do you think that this is, like, karma for him for just moving the headstones in Poltergeist?
Maybe.
They're like, we have to punish you on screen.
Right.
Fun fact with the crematorium scene, that was James Caron's idea.
Yeah.
He made that suggestion to Dan O'Bannon, and they went for it.
Well, that's...
And I think it's a great scene.
Cast, Tom Matthews and Miguel Nunez, both of them from Friday the 13th. Miguel was the cousin or the brother in Friday the 13th, Part 5. Tom Matthews has risen to stardom, being Tommy Jarvis in The Best Portrayal. Sorry, Corey Feldman. But I want to talk about the mortician, Don Kafka, who plays Ernie. Dude was just straight comedy gold. Like, the guy was just so fun. Like, he didn't
take... totally deadpan about it.
Right, and he didn't take... He just, you know, when the half-woman attacked Scuzz, he just stuck a pole in it and just, like, wiped it across the floor. Like, I mean, it was perfect.
Yes. So.
Yeah. And when Bert first goes into the mortuary, he pulls a gun on him. Right. Yes. He's like, whoa, hot off the press there, buddy. Late night.
Buddy boy.
And Bert, Gallagher, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
He was great too. Like, he was like the voice of reason. So you've got Frank and Freddie, our bumbling idiots. You've got our comic relief in Don. And then you've just got Clue, who's just like the voice. He's trying everything to get out of here. The best is when he gets in the car.
And to get out of getting in trouble.
Right, right. When he gets in the car with Spike and they're trying to get away. And Spider. And Spider is just a complete passenger seat driver. It's just like... They've got zombies all around them, and just the comic banter between them as he crashes into the wall is just awesome.
Yeah, no, he's got his eye on the prize the whole film.
So, okay. Anything else that we want to talk about before we move to our next topic? I think we've covered a lot of it, so.
Yeah.
Improvements. What do we think that this movie, what could have made this movie a little bit better? Now, I'm not well-versed on this, but I'm just going to say it. Like, what was the riff between Romero and O'Bannon? Because O'Bannon and Romero worked together on Night of the Living Dead.
No, it was John Russo, one of the stories.
Okay, O'Bannon didn't. I thought O'Bannon did.
Everybody worked with him.
Okay, so it was Russo. That I'm sorry, got my. But what happened?
Russo wrote the original script for Return of the Living Dead. Then Dan O'Bannon completely changed it and then directed it. So it was John Russo.
But Russo worked with Romero.
Yeah, they wrote Night of the Living Dead together.
And so, but there was like a rift there, right? Because Russo had another treatment for the sequel.
I think there was just creative differences. I was watching. The reason I have all these fun facts is because I've been watching this documentary right before we started. John Russo said they're still friends. Everybody thinks they're these mortal enemies. They're still friends. There was like these creative differences, but I think the reason he got the Living Dead portion of the zombie titles, I think it was just one of those things like they're going their separate ways. He's making some demands. That's the one he got.
Yeah.
Any movie that's whatever of the Living Dead, he gets royalties for that. So that's a pretty sweet deal that he got for himself.
I don't know if I would necessarily call that an improvement, but what the movie could be, I don't know. I mean, you've got two different sets of movies. You've got zombies, and then you have Romero starting to take zombie movies, but then adding themes like, you know, our reliance on world capitalism being stuck in a mall, things like that. So, improvements for me, besides that whole thing, is I don't know if I would. I want more gore, but I don't want more gore because I think that would ruin it. I don't know about you guys, but I just think the whole makeup with Linnea Quigley after she gets resurrected was a bit much. You've got very simplistic zombies, and then you've got the decaying one, and then she's just newly resurrected and she's got an extendable jaw. I don't get it. So
I feel like I have an argument.
Okay.
In support.
Okay.
Because I actually like her makeup, but I felt like her whole character had this infatuation with death. You know, talking about it. But I think it was interesting. It's so it's suicide. I mean, his name was suicide, right? They had this weird infatuation with death until they were faced with death. But I felt like, I don't know. I felt like her explaining her greatest fear of how she would die and then living that out. And she was, I didn't, like, it doesn't make sense to like the story of the movie.
Right.
But to me, she wasn't just the Return of the Dead. She was resurrected. She was like in her final form that she wanted to be while she was in this life. So I think they made her stand out and pop a little more. And don't get me wrong, that makes absolutely no sense with the story. But that's how I saw it, and I liked it.
I get that. I 100%. But see, when she's resurrected and she's walking out of the gate and she does not have that extended jaw, that is an iconic image. You have a painted white, red, bright red hair, naked lady walking at the camera with fog. That is iconic image. And then when she comes at the dude and then, of course, the cop, when they extend further, it's just mandible jaw. And you don't even really see it. It's just from the side. So if you're going to do a makeup like that, give it to me. Let me see it. Let me see what that looks like, and let me see her take a bite. But it's like, why do it? Why are you only going to hint at it if you're not going to give me the whole thing?
Shock factor thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Aaron.
No, you're fine. I totally see both sides. I could see how it could be interpreted and be like, yeah, I'm okay with that. I can also see what Ryan is saying in the sense that all the other, Tarman's kind of like that whole disintegration into Tarman is like a little weird. Like it works and he's a great character, but like he goes from being like a wrinkly old corpse to like, right, this like slimy weird guy. So really the effects are kind of all over the place. So I can see the argument to be like, is it really that off color and like off brand in this movie to like turn into Ray Stantz at the end of Ghostbusters 2? No, but I can also see where you're watching it and you're like, she was this like sexy punk rocker and they could have had like sexy punk rocker zombie eating people, but then it got a little like much. And so they kind of took more of like the feminine, like, I don't know, like they did kind of take some of the, like, you could have had a sexy zombie like eating people's faces and that still would have been kind of terrifying and cool because like, I don't know. But instead it got a little weird. So I see where you're coming from, Ryan, with that.
Yeah. And Jay, I see where you're coming from too. Like, and I get that.
Yeah.
You know, she's like this harbinger of death. So why not give her a cool extending mandible?
Yeah.
Any other improvements that you guys can think of?
I kind of had the same thing we've been discussing. Some of the special effects were just insanely good. Some of them not so much. So I wish the effects would have been more consistent throughout. I think would have made it better. But I think that's about where I draw it. I mean, it was not an excessively long movie. I do think, too, what Ryan said, maybe a little more of the gore. Like, that was so fun when Scuzz got his head bitten. It's just spraying everywhere. It's ridiculous. But I think our sensibilities have changed so much since, like, I think this was a pretty shocking movie in 1985. You have, they had to change Full Frontal. She actually had like a little weird codpiece thing over her nether privates because you can't show Full Frontal in the 80s or you're going to get.
Oh my gosh, that would have been an X rating, right?
Yeah, so they couldn't. They had it originally. There's a whole thing they go through on the documentary. First, they couldn't show it because she wasn't. You can't show pubic hair, they said. So they shaved her. And then the guy said, good God, it's worse. I can see everything.
That's what happens. Here's the note I got to say. That's what happens when they
everything. So they made this this thing to cover it up to make it look like a Barbie doll. So even that, it was in a cemetery. This is like near in the time of the satanic panic stuff.
Yes.
You know, so a naked girl dancing in a cemetery. So like in 1985, I think this is a pretty shocking movie. Not shocking to the point where you can't show it in a mainstream theater, but pushing the envelope for a movie.
It ruffled a lot of mom's feathers in the 80s, I'm sure. Because wasn't that also the time when, like, was it Ronald Reagan's wife? Was it Nancy Reagan who was, like, big into, like, the parental ratings? Like,
yeah.
This movie probably Snyder pushed.
Snyder and John Denver team up against Congress.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my God. But, yeah, I'm kind of, well, I'm just usually of the camp, especially when looking back at movies, like, because we don't have a time machine and, like, they worked with what they had at the time.
It was made
for me. I'm always like, nah, I leave it the way it was, because then you don't get what you get if you change anything,
especially on a $4 million budget back in 85. We should be happy with what we got, and you know, they did the best that they could with what they had. So
I don't know, here's what I'm gonna say. I don't know. They interviewed the first special effects guy on that documentary. And a bit of an excuse maker.
Yeah.
I had an excuse for everything. You know?
Oh, okay.
Like, listen, you know your budget's crap, so get the creative juices flowing, bro.
Okay. Like, my husband's friends are all into movies. One of them, he's directed several, like, you know, little movies that they've made. And he's got, like, he's got his PhD from USC in film. They made a movie called Die Zombies Die. My husband's in it. He's not a zombie. He's a janitor. That does a lightsaber fight. That has a lightsaber fight.
Does he die?
No, but he's also an extra as a zombie in the movie. Oh, no, he is an extra as a zombie later. But they had, like, copious amounts of, like, corn syrup blood. Like, they made their budget work, okay? Like, and it's a really fun movie that they made with all their friends and, like, crap. But you're right. Like, you know, you can make things work, especially if you've got a couple $1 million in 1985.
Let's just say Evil Dead was made for $350,000.
Boom!
Just a few years prior. And there's some rough stuff in there, but it's pretty solid for a super low budget.
Was that documentary the More Brains one, Jake?
Let me see. I'm still watching. Yeah. Yes, it is. Okay. More Brains. It's on YouTube.
Well, I mean, that's... are we ready to move on? Do we have anything else to talk about improvements?
I do not.
Okay. Well, I mean, impact. I mean, this movie series has a documentary based off of it. It's called More Brains, I believe. More Brains, The Making of Return of the Living Dead. It is a 91% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is crazy for a zombie movie. That's like Romero-esque. And then, of course, it has garnered a huge cult following. It has spawned four sequels spanning from 88 to 2005. So, yeah, I mean, just the impact of this film. I mean, it really tried to duplicate what the first one did. I remember the second one was just pure comedy. It was kids who discovered the barrels. Army trucks were driving along again, Jay, and they fell off the truck. Kids found him, and then the gas caused more zombies. And then, Aaron, I believe you said you saw the third one, which that goes back to the punk roots, because I remember the girl, she got exposed to the gas in an army base. And she just became this wicked, like, she was like, again, a female badass. And she's actually on the cover of the third movie. Like, it's her, yeah, like, zombified. Really awesome. And then the fourth was called Necropolis, and fifth was called Rave to the Grave, were direct-to-sequel videos. So I think it's ran its course. I don't think anything kind of garnered what the first movie did, because the first one is just such a cult classic. So what are your guys' thoughts on impact?
These movies pretty much turned into, like, when we were talking about how this set of films got the rights to The Living Dead, and then George Romero, like, these sets of movies went to, there was a fork in the road and they went different directions.
Yeah.
For sure. And this set of films and sequels, and they took the, like, USA Up All Night.
Yep.
Like, on at 2 a.m. Like, that's the route these movies took. That's where they went. And you know what? I think they know that. I think they're okay with that. And, like, someone's got to be the film that's shown on cable network at 1 a.m. that, like, 33 people are watching in the country. Someone's got to be that film.
34. You include me in that. Jay, what do you think about the impact of Return of the Living Dead?
I'm going to steer clear of the sequels because I don't know anything about them. I've never seen any of them. But I think this movie is hugely impactful but doesn't get the credit for the impact it's had.
Totally.
Right. Everybody knows Brains. Everybody knows Brains is a zombie thing. And nobody, you know, other than fans of this movie or movie nerds, nobody knows it's from this movie.
You're so right.
Nobody knows that. Yep. And you mentioned 28 Days Later, and that's also when which I think was a good remake, the Dawn of the Dead remake, Zack Snyder did. We were like real close proximity to each other. We had running zombies, and I remember that was a big deal. I can't believe it. They're running zombies. Return of the Living Dead did it.
Right.
Smart zombies. We're seeing that now. It's like that South Park episode where they kept trying to come up with new things. Simpsons did it. Well, when it comes to the zombies, Return of the Living Dead did it. Yep. But it doesn't get the credit it deserves. And I think a big part of that is the confusion with the Romero series.
Yeah.
But also just
as old.
Yeah. But also just as horror comedy, you know, there really wasn't a lot of that until the 80s. I think this is one of the big, you know, Evil Dead 2 was far more the comedy than Evil Dead.
Yeah.
That came out 2 years after this. But you had this movie and you had Reanimator come out the same year, both two of the all-time great horror comedies, two of the great all-time zombie movies came out in the same year. And now we have Zombieland. You've got Shaun of the Dead. You see a lot more clear horror comedies. Horror's always had elements of comedy, but this is clear horror comedy, not a horror with comedy elements. And, you know, we see a lot more movies with those elements because people love them, right? What do we do when we're scared? We do a nervous laugh. So combine the two and it's great. So,
well, the best part too is, like, a lot of horror comedies are going meta, and this movie did it first. You know, it was already living in the realm of Night of the Living Dead. And so they just went from with it from there. I mean, they just, you know, just the classic line, well, did it work in the movie? You know, and that's, I can see us as a civilization. If there ever was an issue, we're like, what did they do in the movies? If there's vampires coming, I'm going to run and get the garlic because that's what the movies told me to do.
Guys, think of how useful you guys are going to be in an apocalypse. Everyone's going to turn to you and thank God I'm on a show with you because now I can too. I get first dibs on
if you can make it down here.
Yeah.
You can make it out of the hellscape that Chicago is going to become.
Yeah, good luck.
I wasn't kidding when I said I turn into Tina Turner in Thunderdome. I'll make it down there.
Who runs Barda Town?
You guys might be coming up to my neck of the woods for my protection.
I need cornfields.
I think that's going to do it here for us. This is our episode for Flashbacks for MonsterCast. Again, I love horror movies. I love talking about them. But before we say our goodbyes, we have to do our shameless plugs. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about, we actually have one more coming up. We are doing a crossover event with our Classics channel. We are going to be covering The Shining for its 40th anniversary because it is a classic horror movie, but it's also a flashback. So we are definitely going to be talking about that movie because it needs to be talked about. And we might actually be linking up with another podcast that's Stephen King focused, and they're from the Quad Cities, which is where I'm from. So fingers crossed that we can get them on board and have a discussion about book versus movie. What else we got coming up, guys?
Jay and I are doing a limited series on, we're doing a Flashbacks Presents, limited series on Raised by Wolves, which is an HBO Max show. We're, I think, in our third episode this week, and we're doing two episodes a time. So we're having a really good time talking about this show. We're getting into it. It's really fun. And then also, are we for MonsterCast for this month doing The Craft, Ryan?
Yes. The goal is with the new Craft. Thank you, Aaron. I completely forgot about that. With Craft Legacy being introduced and released this month, which we were anticipating it being released later, we are going to be doing a flashback to the original Craft while also talking about the new Craft Legacy. So I'll be looking for that for MonsterCast. I think, Jay, you got...
Yeah, we one thing that'll be coming out soon, probably right after or right before this release. I just did an interview alongside Beyond the Mouse host Vanessa with Leslie Iwerks, the Academy Award nominated documentary director on her new documentary called Selling Lies. So that was a very she's very professorial, so she's very smart, and you can just sit there and listen to her, and hopefully you ask the right questions, and she'll just keep going. And so that was a really cool interview that'll be on the main podcast feed, so I hope you guys will check that out. But also here at the Front Row Network, let me spit it out, we're working on stepping up our game, so please follow Front Row Flashbacks on whatever medium you use to listen to your podcast. You can also search and join the Front Row Flashbacks podcast group on Facebook to continue our discussions beyond the podcast. Also, you can find the Front Row Network on Facebook. You can subscribe to our main feed on Spotify or whatever you use to access your podcast. We can be found on the NPR Illinois website under the Community Voices tab, and you can follow us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z. Also, you can find our Patreon on the Front Row Network's Facebook page. So if you've enjoyed this content, there's more available. And we would love for you to join us as a full-time patron. But for those of us at Front Row Flashbacks, I'm Jay Hoffman.
I'm Ryan Lutens.
And I'm Aaron McCabe.
Newbie.
So once again, thanks for joining us. And we'll see you all in the front row.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter @FrontRowReviews with a Z.